So, Mr. Laszlo Andor, on my behalf and on behalf of the all members of the both committees that today are here, the Employment Committee and the European Affairs Committee of the Portuguese Parliament. It's a pleasure to have you here. It's an honor. And we are here to hear you about all the things that you want to explain us today in this Parliament. I will speak in Portuguese now, because it's necessary. Muito bem, caros colegas, é um gosto ter connosco o Sr. Comissário Laszlo Andor. Nós fizemos a reunião, faremos uma reunião conjunta das duas comissões. O Sr. Comissário tem só uma hora, tem de sair às 10 da manhã daqui. Portanto, nós, o Sr. Comissário fará, dirigir-se-á às comissões, nos termos que entender. E depois nós, por partido, daríamos a cada partido 3 minutos para poderem, digamos, colocar alguma questão ao Sr. Comissário, se entender por bem, e depois o Sr. Comissário fará uma breve consideração final antes de encerrarmos a reunião. Mr. Laszlo, the chair is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen. For me, this is also a pleasure to be here, and perhaps you don't mind if I add that in these critical times, it's very important that the European Commission continues a dialogue with the national parliaments, and we have a discussion about how we see the crisis, how we see the way out of the crisis, and how we see the next 10 years of the European Union. When the Barroso II Commission came to office in February, it was already known that the European economy has gone through a devastating economic crisis, which was in a way mitigated by various government measures. Nevertheless, it's really been a tough time for Europe. Practically every member state suffered, and it was not the end. Even if there was already an emerging recovery, we had to face a continued financial uncertainty in 2010. And it required further measures, further developments, developing the financial and economic architecture of the European Union. So this has been a very difficult time for us in Brussels too. Nevertheless, we understood that even in these circumstances, we need to outline a plan for a better development path for the European Union. And that's why just 3 weeks after Barroso II Commission came to office, we already put forward the Europe 2020 strategy. This was meant to replace the so-called Lisbon Agenda, which was adopted in 2000 for developing the competitiveness of the European economy. And this new strategy, which was developed to replace it, received approval from the highest level of the European Council in June. What I would like to speak today is how this Europe 2020 wants to change the landscape in terms of employment and social conditions, from this starting point, which I described as extremely tough, and what is there in the work program of the European Commission for next year to deal with critical issues of the employment area. And I will be happy to answer questions after this. But first, let me speak about how Europe 2020 handles the employment and social questions and going into some details. This strategy is about regaining growth, restoring a good rate of economic growth with certain qualities. We want smart, sustainable and inclusive growth. Smart means primarily that the main factor of competitiveness should be the investment in the human resources, improving the performance of schools, research and development. The transition to the digital economy should be accelerated in all possible areas. Sustainability has two dimensions. It's about the natural resources, how we connect with the natural environment and create better sustainability, but also the sustainability of economic development. And that's why the industrial policy also found itself under the sustainability umbrella of this strategy. And the third pillar is the one where I have most of the activities and the competencies. That's about inclusive growth. The need for inclusive growth and the need for a strategy in this area comes from the recognition that before the crisis, there was a certain amount of prosperity in the European economy. Nevertheless, we did not manage to close the income gap. There was a substantial part of the population that was not contributing to this prosperity or not enjoying the benefits of this prosperity. So we have to be more inclusive in both accounts, include more people into the contributions, which means increasing the rate of employment, and allowing more people to benefit from the prosperity, which will come back, and thus reduce poverty. We included clear headline targets. We do not only have ideas and directions, but headline targets as well, numerical targets. By 2020, we want to achieve 75% employment rate in Europe. This is now standing at about 68-69 as a result of the crisis. As you know, unemployment continued to increase this year in the European Union, what concerns the averages, and now stands at about 10% of the labour force. And the other numerical target which has been agreed is the one on poverty reduction. The objective is to lift at least 20 million people out of poverty. And if we use the at-risk of poverty indicator, which is an income-based relative poverty indicator, we count about 84, 85 million people as being at risk of poverty in Europe. So the objective is to lift at least 20 million. This is what we consider to be ambitious, but realistic at the same time. These targets will be monitored in the coming years. I would not like to engage now in the detailed explanation of how the governance of this will look like, but I would like to go into details of some of the flagship initiatives. Because the Europe 2020 is based on five headline targets, I mentioned two, and seven flagship initiatives, and three out of the seven fall into the area of employment and social relations. One of them, which I had the opportunity to present in November in Strasbourg, is called An Agenda for New Skills and Jobs. This is the key strategy for employment. And it has four chapters, which are the following. The first about the functioning of the labour markets, the second about skills, the third about job quality and working conditions, and the fourth one is about job creation. So we try to address both the quantity and also the quality of the jobs. I believe that's both are very important. I would like to underline two points here. The first one is that the Commission is committed to helping people to take up lifelong learning opportunities. To achieve this, we need more flexible learning pathways. For example, this should be based on learning outcomes and allow for the recognition of non-formal learning. And we have to encourage people to take part in lifelong learning, in particular those who need it most. Why is lifelong learning so important and receives perhaps even more attention in this strategy than previously? It is because we have to anticipate more transitions in the career of an individual worker, and we also have to anticipate longer active working life. I will come back to this later, but the greater need for adjustment and flexibility and transitions, plus the longer working life, inevitably require greater efforts to support this through the opportunities of lifelong learning. The second point I would like to make is about skills. We want to make sure people have the right skills for the jobs available today and in the future as well. Even now, some employers are struggling to fill vacancies because they cannot find people with the right skills. So now that we have about 23, 24 million people unemployed in the European Union, we count 4 or 5 million vacancies. And these vacancies are not filled because there are mismatches between the supply and the demand of labor. People may not necessarily be well skilled for the available jobs. Or it also can happen that they are not well informed about the availability of jobs, or they are not sufficiently mobile to move from one place to another to take up a job. And the European Commission outlined in this strategy suggestions to improve all three, to improve the information through a greater transparency of the European labour market, to provide a skills panorama which would help people seeking jobs in this area. Also a number of initiatives to improve the development of skills and also to help mobility. Once speaking about skills, I can mention to you that my next program in Lisbon will be to visit the Euroskills Championship of Professionals, which gathered 27 countries and 52 skills. And it is really a great competition with a lot of young people. Now, once speaking about young people, there is another flagship initiative in the Europe 2020, which came out earlier in September, and that's called Youth on the Move. It highlights the importance of assisting the young people, because under the crisis period, it became even more visible that the youth cannot protect itself against the volatility of the economy. And when there is a collapse of demand, the young people, especially those on fixed-term contracts, suffer quickest and the most. So now, as I said, we have about 10% unemployment rate in the EU, but we have 20% unemployment rate among the youth, and there are five member states in the EU where in the last period the youth unemployment has been consistently above one-third. And this is really dramatic. It's Spain, it's the three Baltic states and Slovakia, where youth unemployment has been so high. And this is not only a waste of the human resources, but if it cannot be improved quickly, it really threatens with a lost generation. And that's why we published together with Commissioner Vassiliou the initiative which is called Youth on the Move, to highlight for the young people in Europe the possibilities of taking up learning opportunities, but also working opportunities in other countries, where these opportunities can be found. And thus, this is a communication on both education and employment. We believe that there is a need for a close cooperation of these portfolios on the European level, but also on the national level in every single country, in order to help the young people to come quicker to their first permanent job. Very often it's difficult to find the first job, but it's more difficult to find the first permanent job for the youth, and that we believe needs to be assisted, this needs to be handled as a priority. But it also has to be recognized that very often mobility is the way to find the right solutions, and that's what we would like to help. We are strengthening the EURES network. It is a network of advisors and assistants to job-seeking young people. So one of the initiatives is to strengthen this European network that provides advice and also financial support to the young job seekers. There is also another point about the European Skills Passport, which will be based on the existing Europass and will make skills comparable across Europe, because very often the understanding between various national labour markets, various national traditions is still lacking, and we recognise the importance of changing this if we really want to provide more opportunities and help the European labour market to function more efficiently. I would like to draw your attention to the third strategic initiative, which is in Europe 2020. It will be published next week, so I can give you an early introduction into this, and that's about poverty. It's the European Platform Against Poverty and Social Exclusion. I already mentioned to you the poverty target, which first time became established on the European level, and this European platform, which will be published next week, is there to support the work that will lead us to the poverty target, and I believe that the European year, which in 2010 was devoted to fighting poverty and social exclusion, has been very instrumental in creating a political momentum around the need to address poverty. Even if Europe is a relatively wealthy, high-income part of the global economy, we have a high number of poor people, and it's really a responsibility for everyone to tackle this question, and especially in crisis time, there is a need for more solidarity with those who cannot help themselves. This has been, I think, a very successful campaign year. Also in Portugal, I've already participated in one event in Matosinhos earlier this year in May, which was attracting the attention of a lot of people. Many thousands of people came to get information about how the various European institutions and instruments can help people who are at risk of poverty or who struggle from various forms of who suffer from various forms of social exclusion. Now, this poverty platform will outline the policies that governments can apply with the assistance of the EU, and also outline how the European instruments can be developed further in order to provide effective support for the member states that will in the coming years implement their policies in this area. This will also be a framework to maintain and perhaps even reinforce the cooperation, the alliance of civil society organizations that are active in this area, that have been helping to develop these targets, and that will certainly help to implement it and monitor the progress. We really rely on them And this is very important that the Commission continues to support them, but also receives support what concerns the progress towards the 2020 goals. Now, I would like to highlight for you a few items out of the Commission work program for next year, especially in the area of employment and social policies. From now on, we are focusing on the implementation of 2020. This is the new game in town. We want to align practically all policies, if possible, along the Europe 2020 implementation. And this can be also said about my own portfolio. As a Commissioner for Employment, Social Affairs and Inclusion, I see three key priorities in the 2011 Commission work programme. These are about promotion of workers' and citizens' rights. Secondly, paving the way for the future cohesion policy. And third, responding to the demographic challenges. The first priority concerns the workers' and citizens' rights. One aspect involves reviewing the existing legislation in this area and ensuring that it's properly implemented and enforced. The key areas are health and safety at work and the labour law. Let me just mention to you two pieces of sensitive and very important legislation in this area. One of them is the Working Time Directive. As you know, there was an effort under the previous European Parliament and the previous Commission to revise the existing legislation, and this ended in a stalemate. From the Commission's point of view, that's clearly not acceptable. This directive is, as it looks now, not functioning, and President Barroso has made a commitment to the European Parliament about revising the Working Time Directive, and that's what I feel follow. We need a fresh look, a fresh start in this area, a new approach in order to succeed in the revision of the Working Time Directive. This should involve taking changes in working pattern into account, along with the impact of new developments in information and communication technologies, the greater level of flexibility in the European labour market, which has developed in the last two decades. We are just about to launch the second phase of the social partners consultation. And this might be crucial in terms of what it can achieve for the period after. And at the same time, I will be presenting a report on the implementation of the directive and a study on the economic and social impact of working time rules. I will do my utmost to put a fresh proposal on the table in the first half of 2011, probably towards the end of the first half, one that can bring a solution that is acceptable to all parties. The other equally difficult piece of legislation, which is very much in the focus of the discussions, at least in Brussels, that's the posting of the workers directive. There are two sorts of problems facing us in this context. First, there are the problems linked to the implementation and the enforcement of this directive. And the second, there is a problem of striking the right balance between the fundamental rights of workers and the fundamental freedoms of the internal market. In fact, the Spanish presidency, which was in office in the first half of this year, focused on these issues very much and held a very successful conference in Oviedo in March that brought together all the stakeholders, the employers, the employees, organizations, and representatives of various member states. And it is indeed a question that deserves a lot of reflection and a commitment from all sides that there is a readiness to somehow compromise on these issues. So the Commission is currently reflecting on the substance and form that such a proposal about the new working time, the new approach to the posting directive could take, and it will continue to consult all the stakeholders before a proposal is adopted. However, the objective here is not to revise this directive, but help its functioning, because I believe that it strikes the right balance between facilitating cross-border services in the European Union and avoid social dumping at the same time. So I think this is a good objective. It's well written in the directive. However, there are problems with the interpretation and the implementation, and that's what has to be sorted out. Now, the Commission is, as I said, working on several other issues that connect us with employment and social question and highlighted in the work program for next year. I would like to mention the question of the Roma minority, which received a lot of attention this year, especially after the expulsion of Roma migrants from France. We already dealt with it well before these events came in France, and we published a joint communication with Commissioner Reding in April, and we are now preparing another one again to be published in April. But in between, what we have been doing is to establish a task force that's dealing with the implementation of the previous communication, and also particularly focusing on the use of the EU structural funds in this area. And this task force will report very soon, and the conclusions will be used to develop a new European framework for national Roma integration strategies. This is a part of our work that has received a lot of attention in the recent months. There have been many high-level events in the recent period, and we will continue with that, because it's really fundamental, at least for 5-6 member states, to achieve a kind of breakthrough in terms of integration if we want to have a chance to increase the employment rate to the level that has been targeted, and also at the same time address the questions of poverty. And all these new initiatives will influence our work on cohesion, which is an area that's connected with the Europe 2020, but it also goes beyond Europe 2020. Myself, responsible for employment, together with Johannes Hahn, who's responsible for regional policy, are co-owners of the structural funds, co-owners of the cohesion policy. And my particular area here is the European Social Fund. I believe, and we summed up this in the recent fifth cohesion report, the cohesion policies made a significant contribution to the economic development, spreading economic growth across the European Union. There is clearly an added value of money spent from the structural funds, even if it's sometimes criticized or sometimes challenged by highlighting the cases where projects may have gone wrong, but the general pattern is that this is a very important policy for many regions. This provides the only opportunity for significant investments and infrastructure development. What concerns the RDF, human resources investments. What concerns the social fund. So, on the basis of the cohesion report, we have launched a public consultation on the future of cohesion policy, and this is going to be, as I already said, a key activity for us during the next year. This will also be the main connection of this portfolio with the preparations of the next financial perspective, which will also start next year. And that's also a factor that explains why we need to think about innovation, how we want to shape these financial instruments in the future, how we want to make them more accessible, but also more efficient in the future, because with limited amounts, we have to achieve more. Because the challenges we are facing in terms of unemployment, in terms of poverty, have just increased in the recent period, and with the same volume of money in the funds, obviously it's going to be more difficult to reach these targets. But it's clear for us also from the Eurobarometer surveys that the European citizens want us to do more for employment and social affairs. If you look at the treaty, if you look at the rules, these are fundamentally the competence of the member states. However, there are huge expectations that the EU can help, and there are significant instruments. It's not only the financial instruments which I mentioned, the ESF and related funds, but also the policy coordination can help a lot, disseminating the best practices, facilitating a learning process between countries, between regions. Can make a good contribution to address the burning problems of unemployment and poverty in various member states. But we have to preserve our funds, and we have to make them more effective, and that's why the budget review, which was also recently published, calls for a comprehensive European employment initiative, which would provide a focus for using the financial instruments, which would focus on improving skills, mobility, adaptability, and participation in society. This will imply a greater visibility, but also a predictability of funding volumes, what concerns the European Social Fund, because we have to be assured and we have to be able to provide assurance for you that there are substantial funds available to support the policies that help the unemployed, help workers to make progress, develop their skills, and improve their career opportunities. I would like to just say one final word about the financial envelope. The post-crisis adjustment of employment and human capital resources require more resources, but we know that we face difficult discussions about the budgetary resources next year. And that's why one of the issues I'm looking at in the area of the social fund is financial engineering. This has already been introduced in the ERDF, and they are very much looking at opportunities, or looking for opportunities, to enhance financial engineering in the area of the ESF. This would slightly change the nature of the social fund, but it would open opportunities to leverage a lot more funds from various resources to support the efforts of the member states to create more jobs and help people in general. Now, I would just like to touch upon one more issue, which is the demographic change. I mentioned that this is something also in the focus of the next year work program and also in the focus of the two next presidencies. Hungary and Poland already expressed their views about the priorities, what they want to do next year. And in my portfolio, this is one of the key issues where they would like to see strengthening of what the Commission has been doing already. It's not been a highly visible part of the Commission's work. There are some people who don't even know that the Commission also deals with demographic questions. But now there is clearly a need to do that. It would be, in a way, a follow-up to what we have been doing on pensions and a preparation for further activities in this area. What we have been doing on pensions is to publish a green paper. I received an input from your parliament also to this, because we had a 4-month consultation period to discuss a green paper which is aimed at adequate, sustainable and safe pensions in Europe. We had a very successful consultation conference in October as well, and we received altogether more than 1,600 opinions sent to the Commission and about this question. I expressed my gratefulness for all contribution, and especially I have now an opportunity to thank you for yours. These obviously provide an important contribution and provide orientation for the European Commission about how to continue this work and how to prepare a next important document in the area of pensions, which would be a white paper. The white paper, which is scheduled for the second half of next year, would already provide recommendations without prescribing to various countries what to do. Because again, this is a matter of subsidiarity. The design, the funding, the reform of the pension system is a competence of the individual member state, but the Commission is ready to assist with consultations, with expertise, this work. And I also have to add that there are a few issues where the Commission will have to take the initiative, and these are the questions linked to the integration, the integrated European labour market and mobility in particular. There are some issues like the portability of the occupational pensions where member states separately will probably not take initiative, but the European Commission can and will have to. We will also do more for the safety, since the pension systems are linked with the financial markets one way or another, and there is a need to preserve the safety of the pensions from this angle, and the risk on the side of the financial markets has been highlighted in the last 2 years through the huge volatility, and that's why my colleague Michel Barnier is looking at what needs to be done on that area, what concerns regulation. I can believe that there will be some initiatives on that side too. But we have some time, and all the contributions will be looked at very seriously in the coming months, and a social impact assessment will also be carried out before we will bring a white paper out. And this work on demography, which I mentioned, which is scheduled for the next year, a very high-level conference in Budapest under the presidency, and then a Commission communication probably in June, will, in my view, highlight even more the demographic challenges which we are facing and which are connected with the labour market and especially connected with the sustainability of the pension systems in various member states. And as a follow-up to all this, we already initiated 2012 to be the European Year for Active Aging. Now the Council a little bit amended this initiative and put forward that it should be the European Year for Active Aging and Intergenerational Solidarity. No matter what the final decision will be, I think it will be a very important opportunity to highlight for the European citizens that there is a clear trend in the developments here, whether by increasing the statutory retirement age or other ways, we are in a position to work longer, and we have to increase the employment rate among the older workers as well, but we need to provide assistance to this, we have to provide guidance, and we have to raise the awareness about this, and in a way it's true, this is also a matter of solidarity between the generations. I think I have managed to summarize the inclusive part of the Europe 2020, what concerns employment and social affairs. I also highlighted for you some of the elements of the work program of the Commission next year, the legislative one, about the Roma, about the cohesion policy, about demography and pensions. I believe this together demonstrates that the Commission really believes that our work has to have a strong social dimension. The European Union, the European agenda would fail without a strong social dimension. It's not only these items where it comes through, but also other issues like the Single Market Act, for example, where we did our best to guarantee that the strong social dimension is preserved. And we have to meet the expectations of the European citizens who want to see the European institutions being more supportive, and especially to start a recovery from this situation, which brings about jobs and brings a greater level of social cohesion in Europe. Let me stop here, and I'm open to discuss with you all the elements which I have been discussing in the introduction, but of course I'm open if you raise other aspects as well.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Comissário, pela disposição que nos fez, pela visão que nos deu daquilo que vai ser o programa da Comissão nos próximos tempos, no que toca, nomeadamente, à Estratégia 2020, que aqui referiu. Eu peço desculpa, mas tenho a informação de que o Sr. Comissário tem mesmo de sair às 10, não é? 10 e um quarto. Bom, portanto, temos 25 minutos. Temos, sim, nós também temos de sair às 10, temos plenário e, portanto, estamos a ouvir aqui o Sr. Comissário. E, portanto, queria agradecer ao senhor Comissário a exposição que nos fez aqui. Nós também temos todas preocupações com a implementação desta Estratégia 2020, que, ao fim e ao cabo, é a continuação da Estratégia de Lisboa. Gostaríamos que, a nível da União Europeia, no que me diz respeito, alguns dos erros cometidos no que toca à implementação da Estratégia de Lisboa não acontecessem no que toca à implementação da Estratégia 2020, nomeadamente no que toca a dois aspectos, ao modelo de governação, à governance, e no que toca à alocação orçamental para o desenvolvimento da Estratégia 2020. Eu acho que são dois aspectos determinantes. Penso que a União tem de ponderar muito bem a questão da governance da Estratégia e também a alocação de recursos financeiros para a sua própria implementação, sob pena de daqui a 10 anos estarmos em situações complicadas e estarmos a fazer o mesmo queixume que hoje fazemos em relação à não implementação da Estratégia de Lisboa, que é uma excelente estratégia, mas que a União, apesar de tudo, não teve capacidade para a implementar nos termos e condições em que ela foi, digamos, gizada e estabilizada. E, portanto, esse é o meu grande desejo. Senhor Comissário, se estivesse de acordo, eu dava 2 minutos a cada partido para, digamos, uma breve reflexão e depois dava a palavra ao Senhor Comissário, que também temos sido. PCP, Jorge Machado, do PCP.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente.
2 minutos, Jorge.
Sim, senhora. Sr. Comissário, obrigado pela disponibilidade. Muito rapidamente, dizer que vivemos uma crise, que é uma crise do próprio sistema económico, que é uma crise que vamos repetir no futuro, dada a natureza e as contradições do próprio sistema em que vivemos, e, portanto, ela precisa ser enfrentada de uma outra perspectiva. Mas dizer-lhe que, quanto às medidas de crescimento inclusivo, mais emprego e a pobreza, de retirar 20 milhões de pessoas da pobreza, que eu até acho um objetivo não otimista, veja-se o que fez o Brasil, por acaso, sobre esta matéria, e portanto, é um objetivo realista, não otimista, mas estas medidas anunciadas confrontam com aquilo que é o garrote aos países, que é o Pacto de Estabilidade da União Europeia. Dizer que as receitas vendidas a todos os países da Europa, seja Portugal, Grécia, Espanha, para esta crise que vivemos, é sempre a mesma, de cortar nas prestações sociais, atacar quem menos tem, vai resolver o problema do emprego ou o problema da pobreza, é mentira. E, portanto, as receitas vendidas pela União Europeia a nível de estratégias de combate à crise financeira vão ter uma consequência do agravamento da pobreza e da injustiça social. E, para terminar, desafio demográfico. Porque é que a União Europeia não considera, por exemplo, para os sistemas públicos de segurança social, as contribuições não dependerem exclusivamente do número de trabalhadores, mas dependerem também da riqueza criada pelas empresas? Ora, e essa percentagem da riqueza que não contribui para a segurança social, também contribuir para a sustentabilidade financeira da segurança social, temo e lamento ter tão pouco tempo para essa nossa troca de opiniões.
É verdade, mas um dia convidaremos o Sr. Comissário para, com calma, vir aqui ao Parlamento Português, dentro das suas disponibilidades. Teremos muito gosto em recebê-lo, mas hoje penso que foi útil ouvi-lo. E portanto, 2 minutos, Artur Rego, CDS. Sr. Deputado Artur Rego, do CDS.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente, Sr. Comissário, em nome do Partido Democrata Cristão, do CDS, agradeço a sua presença aqui e a exposição que fez. Há uma questão que nos preocupa. Nós concordamos, como é evidente, com a Estratégia 2020, ouvimos atentamente a exposição que fez contra as diversas facetas dessa estratégia. Temos um pequeno problema aqui. A União Europeia tem um sistema dual. Tem um sistema em que existem políticas comunitárias, transnacionais, e depois tem um sistema que é o sistema que cada país tem implantado em diversas áreas. E um deles é precisamente a questão da segurança social, da previdência. Portugal, como país periférico, é um dos países neste momento menos desenvolvidos da Comunidade Europeia e acumula essa qualidade com outra que é, neste momento, uma taxa de natalidade negativa. O país está a envelhecer aceleradamente e estamos com uma taxa de natalidade negativa. E a questão que se nos põe com esta estratégia e em geral, por integrarmos a Comunidade Europeia neste momento, é muito simples. Portugal tem investido nos últimos anos, e tem investido muito, com políticas melhores ou piores, mas tem investido muito na educação dos nossos jovens, na sua formação e na sua qualificação. E o que se passa é que, devido à recessão económica que afeta Portugal mais que países do centro da Europa, dezenas de milhares dos nossos jovens têm ido para outros países, precisamente ao abrigo dessa mobilidade.
Artur, tem de terminar.
Eu termino num minuto. A questão que temos é esta: se os jovens portugueses saem e nós temos uma população a envelhecer, como é que nós vamos aguentar o nosso sistema de segurança social se os nossos melhores e mais qualificados recursos estão no resto da Europa e nós estamos condenados a ficar com uma população envelhecida e com poucas qualificações?
Okay, obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Adão e Silva. Sr. Deputado Adão e Silva, Partido Social Democrata.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Sr. Comissário, agradeço-lhe as suas informações. Também vou colocar uma questão ligada com os sistemas da segurança social e, concretamente, o sistema de pensões. Dizer-lhe que, perante a crise económica que se vive hoje na Europa, O primeiro sofredor foi o sistema de segurança social. Veja-se o caso de Portugal, por exemplo, veja-se o caso da Irlanda, onde foi aprovado agora um novo orçamento com grandes cortes a nível das prestações sociais. Mas em termos de prestações sociais, eu queria falar sobre a questão das pensões. O Livro Verde das Pensões é um bom documento, esperamos então ansiosamente pelo Livro Branco das Pensões, é de facto um dos grandes documentos que, Livro Verde, um dos grandes documentos que foi produzido nos últimos anos na Europa, mas a verdade é esta, é que nós não podemos falar muito longamente sobre esta matéria das pensões, do sistema de pensões, enquanto não se alterar o modelo de financiamento. Nós hoje temos um sistema de pensões muito baseado em princípios que eram do século passado e de há muitas, muitas décadas. Aqui há 2 ou 3 anos foi aprovado no Parlamento Europeu uma recomendação apresentada pelo deputado Silva Peneda, recomendação aprovada por unanimidade, que visava justamente alterar o sistema de financiamento das pensões. Porque a Europa não vai aguentar durante muito mais tempo um sistema de pensões baseado numa lógica laborista, numa lógica de trabalho, numa lógica de indexação às remunerações. E, portanto, a pergunta que eu faço é: qual é o futuro do financiamento do sistema de pensões a nível da Europa? Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Deputado Adão e Silva. Senhora Deputada Anabela Freitas, do Partido Socialista.
Muito obrigada, Sr. Presidente. Em primeiro lugar, realmente estamos aqui com... Obrigada. Em primeiro lugar, cumprimentar o Sr. Comissário e agradecer a sua presença aqui. Serei muito breve. Efetivamente, uma taxa de 75% de emprego para 2020 é uma meta muito ambiciosa e que as políticas que a Comissão Europeia está a seguir centram-se naquilo que é essencial, a qualificação dos recursos humanos e para promover um maior ajustamento entre a procura e a oferta. No entanto, eu gostaria de deixar nesta questão uma... A minha questão centra-se precisamente aqui. A qualificação tem que abranger os sistemas de ensino também. E em Portugal tem sido feito, e o último relatório da OCDE vem precisamente nesse sentido, tem sido feito um caminho longo para a qualificação dos portugueses e a articulação entre o sistema de educação e o mundo empresarial. Aquilo que gostava de colocar a questão: estamos a falar da qualificação apenas da mão de obra e a qualificação das entidades empresariais, porque se a entidade empregadora não estiver qualificada, também não pode aplicar as novas formas de orientação da organização do trabalho. Obrigada.
Muito obrigado, colegas. Agradeço também por se terem mantido dentro daquilo que estava acordado. Dava a palavra agora ao Sr. Comissário para as considerações que entende por convenientes dentro do tempo que tem disponível. Não há mais tempo para ninguém.
Thank you very much. Let me answer some of the key questions that I heard. I think there is obviously a concern about the crisis and the impact of this crisis. It's absolutely true that if we had a continued financial instability, we would find it extremely difficult to achieve any progress with our objectives in the area of employment and social cohesion. But now the picture is quite complex. We have a kind of dualism, an emerging divide within Europe. It's true that some core countries are now developing quite well. There is already job creation, a net job growth in some countries, and at the same time there is instability still on the peripheries. You saw Ireland recently. It's probably not completely the end of this unstable period, but the decision makers are doing their best to strengthen the financial architecture. So we have to assume that this program is for 10 years and there would be soon an end of the period when all different types of sacrifice had to be made. It was in this period up to the national governments how much fairness they can apply when there is a need to respond to the crisis, and eliminate the uncertainty and restore stability. But I think it is needed if we want to restart investment, and that's needed to restart economic growth. So this is a situation which has been extremely tough, but one should not assume that this will be the basis of our activities in the next 10 years. I think whatever needs to be done in the next months to consolidate the situation will hopefully be done on the European level, and the cohesion of the European structures would be stronger. But that also calls for strengthening individual policies of the EU and also cohesion. I believe it's right that our policies about employment, the new skills and jobs agenda, and the youth on the move also tries to facilitate a stronger European integration in the labour market as well. If certain countries, including Portugal, but 2 weeks ago I was in the Baltic states, and there were similar observations that if young people leave, then it's a loss of resources of the country, and in the long run it doesn't help either the economic development or the sustainability of social security. I believe this is an argument in favour of strengthening the cohesion policies, that the European Union does more and more effectively to help investment in the countries that cannot boost investment in other ways. It seems that, for example, low taxation or simply low wages is not the right way to do that. We have to help the investment in the human resources. We have to help from European funds the investment in infrastructure development, and help the environment becoming more favorable for small and medium-sized businesses. And that's where the job creation capacity really lies. So if SMEs can develop in a country, I think that's the best source for job creation in large quantities, because in the coming years the governments will face constraints in terms of job creation. It's clear that in some countries the governments will have to employ less people directly than in the recent years as a result of the crisis. The crisis practically meant that the number of jobs in many countries in the private sector shrunk, and the state had to increase employment in order to help a lot of people to go through this period. And then in the coming period these proportions will change. We have to focus on generating jobs in the private sector, but if possible generating jobs with quality, jobs with rights, jobs with knowledge content, jobs which require skills, and these aspects will have to be assisted by the European instruments, and especially the European Social Fund. We discussed a lot about aging and the consequences of that. It's not for the European Commission or any European institution to set the retirement age in member states, but I think the conclusion can only be that because of the longer life, the increasing life expectancy, there has to be a trend towards longer working life as well. But it doesn't automatically mean how much the member state governments have to adjust about the retirement age. If the unemployment is less, if the young people can start a good job and accumulate pension savings, if we can reduce the number of early retirements, if when we can help some of the people with disabilities to take at least part-time jobs. So if we manage to increase the rate of employment in these groups, then there is less pressure on the member state governments to increase the statutory retirement age, and we clearly not just advocate but also try to support the job creation in these categories that have been suffering a lot in the recent period, and especially under the crisis period. So what concerns the cuts, I would like to stress again that this is in most countries affected by the financial crisis, the pressure from the market, probably an inevitable way to stabilize the situation. This is not a pattern for the next 10 years. This is a short-term response. To the extent the markets can be made more quiet, also by better regulation, then the emergency situations will not be there anymore, and there can be a better focused policy which takes into account the need for creating jobs and protecting the vulnerable groups of society.
Muito obrigado. Bom, nós temos terminado a nossa reunião. Agradecer ao Sr. Comissário e agradecer também a presença do Sr. Deputado e Presidente da Comissão dos Assuntos Europeus, Vitalino Canas. Não sei se quer dizer alguma palavra. Mas... Muito bem, então terminamos aqui a nossa breve reunião, agradecendo mais uma vez ao Sr. Comissário a sua presença aqui no Parlamento Português.